House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:15 on February 20th. Present, we have Representative Ledoux, Representative Tilton, Representative Hughes, Representative Colbert, Representative Josephson, Representative Tito, and myself, Chair Olson. We have a quorum. In fact, we have the whole committee. Please turn off your cell phones. We have two items on the calendar today. The first is House Bill 81, Exemption Licensing Contractors. We first heard this bill last week. During that meeting, we had a presentation from the sponsor and took public testimony. It's my intention today to finish public testimony, take up the CS and amendments in the members' packet, and if the committee wishes to move the bill. Representative Tilton, will you give us a 30,000-foot view of the bill?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to do that. I did introduce HB 81 last week. I just wanted to reiterate that HB 81 does not prevent Alaskans from building their own home. It does not prevent Alaskans from ever selling their own home that they built, and it does not propose a new license. There's been a lot of question about the two-year time limit that's sitting there. That's something that's in the existing bill already. What HB 81 does is it simply seeks to reasonably include all individuals engaged in home construction as a regular course of business in the existing residential contractor licensure. So it's really a consumer protection bill. Thank you.
Any further questions from the members for the sponsor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we could clear up a discrepancy between the sponsor statement and provisions of 08.818. In the sponsor statement, it reads, the Commissioner of Labor would have to okay the sale within 2 years. But according to 08.18, under definitions, when you reference department as is referenced in the bill, it refers to the Department of Commerce. So I'm not clear about who will be doing the enforcing. I want to understand how this bill would be enforced if it passes.
Are you referring to the CS or the original bill?
It's the same provision in the original on the CS as the original bill. And the sponsor statement that accompanies it says Department of Labor enforced, but the bill references Department of Commerce. If we get some clarity on that, appreciate it. Thank you.
I think the bill will trump the sponsor statement, if that helps. Any further questions for the sponsor? Seeing none, we left public testimony open, and I believe with that I'll reopen public testimony. Let's see. First up is Patrick Dalton. Are you with us, Patrick?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name and affiliation and limit your testimony to 3 minutes.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is Patrick Dalton. I'm in Delta Junction. I represent myself, and I really appreciate you allowing me to speak up on this. I realize the legislature is composed of very professional individuals that have a definite such a high calling in our state to draft legislations that we need. However, this particular bill I find very disturbing. And I am a licensed contractor, a specialty contractor, and I like to think I do the best job I can when I build. And I like quality, but first of all, what I'd like to point out is if a bill like this does need to be drafted, which I don't believe, I think it should be done at the borough and city level. And the reason for that is that the closer to the people that a bill is, that a piece of legislation is, that you draft it to, the better. And excuse me for not speaking very clearly here, but the closer it is to the local community that wants this type of thing, the better. So it should be city, borough, not statewide. There's going to be a lot of problems if it is passed. For instance, a lodge out at Chandler, Minchamina, someplace like that, a person builds it and they sell it less than a year. What are you going to do? What kind of enforcement? How are you going to get out there to do that? Now, to the point that I'm really against this, reading the sponsor statement, I read things like toward the end of it, the last part of the sponsor statement says, they need, let's see, in cases where the owner builder finds that they need to sell their home, for legitimate reason, there's a provision by the Department of Labor to waive any enforcement action. Now, Declaration of Independence, when it was written, it said, originally, it said life, liberty, and property. It was changed to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Well, the property is very important to us in America, and some of us out here in the unorganized borough really value property and freedom. And really what you're doing when you draft legislation like this is you're telling a person that they cannot sell their property without being illegal for whatever reason. And to me, that is just plain wrong. Even in the Bible, we have the Eighth Commandment, I believe it is, thou shalt not steal. Now, when you tell a person they cannot sell their property for whatever reason, that is really close to being stealing. And I'd like you to just think, see, I'm just a citizen, a mere citizen, but I have a conscience, and it's my moral responsibility to point out to you when I see legislation being drafted that is infringing on people's rights and their freedoms. And, you know, I realize the boroughs are big places, they're complicated, there's a lot of shoddy building going on in certain cases and everything, and we're concerned about the consumer. But, you know, a lot of us live in the unorganized borough because we like freedom, the way America used to be. And I just would like to plead with you to please keep this kind of what I would call draconian legislation, keep it in the boroughs if you prefer, so that there's still a free place in America where people can go and be free to build the way they like.
Could you wrap it up, please, Mr. Melton?
Yes, I will. I guess thank you. I had not rehearsed it, so I appreciate you taking my input and thinking about it.
Well, thank you for participating in the process. Eric Clark, Sylvan, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us today, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, my name is Eric Clark. I live in Soldotna, and I'm representing myself.
Please continue.
My wife and I found ourselves in a situation, along with 10 other homeowners on the Kenai Peninsula. We purchased a new home in 2011, and the builder we purchased our home with turned out to be an unlicensed builder who was building outside of the current statutes. He was building 2 to 3 homes every year. These homes have substantial construction defects. They include a lack of a vapor barrier in the attic, undersized wiring, oversized circuit breakers, no venting for the plumbing fixtures, along with other structural defects. These homes have to be stripped to the studs to make the repairs. The entire plumbing and electrical systems have to be removed and replaced, along with substantial structural defects. Our home alone is going to require over $100,000 to correct these construction defects. The builder had hired an engineer to inspector to do the construction inspections on Alaska Housing QR 102 form. And they passed all of his inspections, and these homes should never have passed any of the inspections. We hired a home inspector prior to our purchase who failed to find any of the defects on these homes. After we discovered these defects, we ended up retaining an attorney and filed a civil suit in the courts down here. And once we had discovered that we had all of these issues, one of the things we wanted to do was prevent anybody else from going through the issues that we've had. So we filed licensing complaints and a complaint with the state troopers. The license complaints, only one of the people ended up being able to have any fines or anything put on them, and that was the builder. But we've also had contact with some of the members of this committee about the situation and what's gone on with us. What we would like to see is the House Bill 81 getting passed, having some changes in the current way to more make a definition on people, when they're doing violations of the statutes, where they can be corrected. As it is now in our case, the Department of Law has been unable to do prosecution on these folks because of the way the statute is wrote. If they follow in under any one of the exemptions, then they feel they can't prosecute them. So being able to have legislation that can help prevent anybody from having to go through what we've had to go through on this and the other 11 homeowners in our situation as well would be appreciated if this committee could pass and adopt House Bill 81. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eric. Ray Clark, also Solana. Are you with us?
Yes.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and I'm guessing you're probably related to the previous speaker.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Clark did not wish to testify at this time. Thank
you. Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Let's see.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Is it possible to ask Mr. Clark a question?
No.
Okay, thank you.
We've got three people that called in without calling through our office, and I'm not really sure how they got the off-net number. Because this is the first meeting, I'll take them this time, but in future use, the only people that we will take have to go through Conrad Jackson in the office is customary. But with that, we've got... Mike Coons, are you with us, Mike?
And I will contact your staff in the future.
Oh, no, you can please continue. It's obviously what you're doing, so thank you for joining us today, and you've got 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you, sir. My name is Mike Coons. I live in Palmer, and I'm speaking for myself. I've looked at this bill. I've talked to Representative Culver and Representative Tilton fairly extensively, and I think the big issue is as the previous testifier was being ripped off like he was. The way it sounds like we do have some people out there doing this kind of stuff. The things that come to mind is. Under Alaska state law, my understanding on real estate is if you sell more than one home per year, you have to have a real estate license, which means you have to be a realtor and all that. Now that goes with that. So for people that are doing that, for doing this, they're doing more than one or two, one home a year. They're in violation on that. So so if you're doing this continuously, that becomes a business. This isn't just me selling, if my house burns, as I say, I'm having a really bad 2 years, my house burns down, and I say, okay, I'm going to build my own home. I bring in a contractor, and I say, hey, you're going to subcontract this, and then my wife turns around and dies next year and I have to sell it, just having a really bad time, that's one thing. But if I go out and buy 10 one-acre parcels and start building homes and then turning around saying I'm an owner-builder and I'm putting out shoddy stuff, and that's a business. So but the correction to this, I think, is on lines 21 to 25. To correct the problems of the substandard construction, if we were to say in those lines to say something on the order of construction is advertised for sale or sold during the period of construction, unless the owner can produce to the department satisfaction a full list of the contractor, subcontractors used for the construction with full documentation, their licenses, bonding, and insurance, that then would protect the future homeowner and the integrity of the construction industry. I think that would go far, go a long ways, and I understand that Representative Culver has an amendment that kind of goes towards that, but not, I don't think it goes far enough. But thank you for the opportunity to testify.
And thank you again for joining us. Pamela Good, are you with us? Delta?
Hello?
Please state your name and affiliation, and thank you for joining us today.
Okay, my name is Pamela Good, and I'm here as a private citizen, no affiliation, except for that. Okay, let's start off with, and this is the way that I present, I approach this, and that is this constitutional or not, this bill, or these changes? And I would say it's questionable. And then you go on to say, does it increase or degrade any man's individual liberty? And I would say that it clearly does. And then does it increase the size or the power of government? And I would say it does. And I, like you, have taken an oath to uphold the Constitution. So if I'm going to make a mistake on a decision, I'm going to make sure it errs on the side of liberty and freedom. What normally happens with bills like this is, like we've heard the man previously, is that somebody has been wronged. And when somebody has been wronged, the consumer normally, they run to the government to try to fix this, or they think to make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, my first thought is, we're at a time in our history where we have the internet, easy access to newspapers and stuff to forewarn consumers that things like this are going out. The first time these people aren't selling their products, they're going to go out of business because there's not going to be a buyer in there. Because the consumer wants the best product for the best price. And normally, unfortunately, that's why a lot of times it happens, is because when the government gets involved, they're driving up the price of everything with licensing, rules, regulations. We have that problem. We hear it all the time coming out of the legislature. Now, this particular bill, I'm going to move on to one thing, and that is the wording of this also. It says if the structure under construction is advertised as sold during the period of construction. Well, I live in an unfurnished home, and I know several people who do. So I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that means they couldn't purchase their house. And then 2 years after the construction is finished, well, I know most people don't live in finished homes. And now this is saying that they can't sell their home. And then it goes on to say, unless the owner can demonstrate to the department's satisfaction, it's like, well, that's subjective. Department's satisfaction is like, who are we going to go to? And then we're going to have to explain our situation, and they're going to give us permission to sell our house. Once again, that's all a degradation of individual liberty, and it failed my litmus test, but I appreciate you letting me testify.
Thank you very much for joining us today. James Squires, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. My name is James Squires. I'm an Alaska Constitution Article 1, Section 2 Alaskan. I'm not a contractor, and I'm actually a CPA by profession. I oppose this bill. I live remote, off the grid, in the unorganized borough. I feel like you folks who live in the more urban parts of the state may not realize the unintended consequences that may be an outcome of this legislation. No man's liberty or property are safe while the legislature is in session. That's a Mark Twain quote. I take exception with the language that states 2 years after the period of construction ends. So to borrow Representative Tilton's view here, let's take a 30,000-foot view looking down the state of Alaska. We see that over one half of the state geographically is in the unorganized borough. Many people out here pay cash for their land, and they build on a pay-as-you-can-afford basis. Many folks live safely and comfortably in unfinished structures where construction has not ended. They are building in one of the harshest environments on Earth without complaint until the legislature gets into their affairs. Moreover, many folks out here have multiple properties and acquire multiple structures. Oftentimes, all of them are uncompleted. And they do this as they better their position and move closer to a job or move further or closer to town, you know, whatever it is that they want to do. If this individual had to or wanted to sell everything at once and leave due to a change of job, loss of health, or any other reason, they would run afoul of this bill with an extra onerous burden that they would otherwise not have to bear. But on a different note, another consideration that I've not heard discussed, I have heard close a loophole and level the playing field, you know, but I've not heard the contrast regarding an owner-builder who puts up his own capital and does not receive one dime unless the structure sells for more than what he has in it. This entrepreneur bears the full risk of the market versus the contractor who works for others for contracted amounts who receives progress payment payments yet puts up no capital. Furthermore, looking at Webster's dictionary, the definition of a contractor is one of the parties to a contract, of which the owner-builder is not contracting per se. There's a huge inherent difference here. The subsequent contract to sell his property is a different matter than a contract to build, of which you need to be duly licensed, etc. That's an important point that I wanted to make. The best way to take control over people and control them utterly is to take a little of their freedom at a time to erode rights by 1,000 tiny and almost imperceptible reductions. In this way, the people will not see these rights and freedoms being removed until past the point at which these changes cannot be reversed. That's a quote by Adolf Hitler. This is not the first time this legislation has come up. I was opposed to it last year, and it failed to make it through. Your legislators are paid to be a part of this issue, and the contractors' lobby clearly thinks they have a financial interest in this as it keeps coming up. I would hazard a guess that most of us testifying against this bill are not being paid in any form or fashion, and that we're being unnecessarily burdened by the state by having to be continually vigilant, as per the Mark Twain quote at the beginning of my presentation. Even with a fiscal note of zero, it cost the state significant money and time for this bill to be repeatedly dragged through the legislative process, which is not a good thing in this time of physical crisis. This is a problem in some urban areas of the state, and if it's a problem in some urban areas of the state, it should be handled locally, perhaps at the borough or municipal ordinance.
Could you wrap it up, please?
Around the state, and including the most remote cabin, is an unnecessary, unintended consequence.
Mr. Squires, could you wrap it up, please?
I'm still to go any further and request a roll call vote when the time comes. That concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us today. And is there anybody else on line or off, Matt? Questions only from, oh, they're in the room, aren't they?
You've got a couple of off-nets.
She declined. Questions, yeah. We've got Al Nagel from the Department of Labor offline for questions only from the committee. Any questions for Al?
I'm sorry, from which department?
Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
I do, actually.
Fire away. Are you with us, Al?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
We got a question for you, Al. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chairman, it's Al Nagel. I'm Program Manager for the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Labor Standards Safety, Mechanical Inspection Section.
Thank you. Through the chair, is it Mr. Nagel?
Nagel.
All right. Mr. Nagel, Andy Josephson here in Juneau. And my question is, I guess one thing that's not clear to me fully is why the main change that is on lines 21 through 25, page 2 of the CS, the committee substitute. Of draft A, so the original bill as written. Why that language improves the chance of enforcement? Because there's already a limitation of 2 years per owner-contractor. And I'm just trying to figure out what is it that is magical about lines 21 through 25 that makes it so DOL can better enforce the prohibition on transfer of title, I guess.
Chair, Representative Josephson. First of all, the language really comes from the industry itself. The concerns come from the industry themselves. From an enforcement standpoint, it kind of remains consistent with the existing statute. The prohibition for an owner-builder is currently 2 years between the completion and the start of a new structure. So one of the things that we have found of the more egregious offenders over the year, those individuals that we found trying to actually make a business of this thing, was that the idea that they were doing it so that they could move the homes after they built them, sell them, and move on to another one. And grant you, they are under, some of those remain under violation of the existing statute. Some hold off just long enough to meet the 2 years and then start another one. So I think the idea was that to, if you will, I've heard the term level the playing field, and I guess that's a fair term, that these individuals that are trying to make a business out of it without carrying some of the overhead are on the same business level as a licensed contractor who carries all that overhead.
Paul?
Yes. Mr. Nagel, is this partly, do you see this language as in effect making this a four-year or a four-year requirement?
Through the chair, Representative Joshua, no, I don't think I do.
Okay. I'll have to give that some thought. Thank you.
Any further questions?
No.
Thanks again for joining us today, Al. Are you going to stay online?
Yes, sir.
Greg Mitchell, Department of Labor, questions only. Any questions for Greg? Yep. You get off late today, Greg. Nobody else online? Anybody in the room that would care to testify on the bill?
Yes, I do have a question. If that's
Mr. We got a question for Greg or Al?
Gray, I guess. I'm not exactly sure, Mr. Chair, whichever one of them is best suited, because we've heard testimony regarding individual liberty and the owner-builder, and as I read the bill, I see that those that build their homes, typical Alaskans who want to get out there and do this, will continue to have the freedom to do that and won't have to really worry about the statute. And it would only be if it were picked up, and would probably by those that are licensed and following the rules would notice that someone isn't following the rules, that might file a complaint that would be brought to the attention of the department, and then it would be looked into. So I'm very pro individual liberty, and I understand that, but I think that there's a misunderstanding of how it might impact the typical Alaska building his or her home. And really, if we're talking about individual liberties, we should take all the regs and license requirements away, so that, you know, that also would create a level playing field. As long as we have those requirements, those of licensure for the contractors, those that are engaging in that business, it would seem to me, need to follow those rules. And as long as we aren't negatively impacting the owner builders to freely build their homes, could you just comment on how you see this impacting the typical Alaska building his home? I know it was kind of a round around question and comment, but I just want your opinion as far as some of the testimony we heard in that regard.
Yes, through the chair, this is Gray Mitchell, Director of Division of Labor Standards and Safety at Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And I guess I would view the change as, a little bit more restriction on someone who's trying to evade the contractor licensing requirements, and that it really wouldn't affect someone who was just trying to, build their own house, or, if they ended up building a house and they needed to sell it. I don't see that, being affected either. Really the intent that I see is catching someone who's, building a house, in this 2-year time frame and offering it up for sale during that 2-year time frame as a regular recurrence, that's what this is intended to kind of catch and stop, to the degree that it's unfairly competing with everyone else who's trying to do that as a business.
And so you don't see in this anything that's going to require any onerous administrative type steps that the regular owner builder will have to go through if they build their home, and as I believe one of the testifiers mentioned, a spouse dies and needs to sell their home under that 2-year period. You don't see that being any kind of problem. That person won't have to contact the department. That person won't have to answer to anyone. They'll just go on with life and sell their home. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Tilton, that's the way that I would see it. Although the you know, the wording of the bill kind of makes it sound like, you know, a person would have to come to the department and get approval before they sold their house. In practical application, I don't see it working that way. You know, I would only see the department getting involved if we had a complaint and, you know, someone brought something forward to us saying, hey, this guy here is building houses in competition with me, and there's one for sale over on XYZ Street, and we would go check it out. Other than that, I just really can't imagine us even having the resources to check into these sales that are happening all the time.
One more follow-up.
Follow-up.
Would you consider the person that I just described, that whose spouse died, if they didn't check in with the department, would they be in violation of the statute?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, I guess I'm just curious about something then. If you don't read this as meaning that somebody comes to the department if they want to sell their home, and then they sell it, and then there's a problem, then how is the person who's just bought that house, how is that person protected? I mean, I guess I sort of viewed this as that you did it beforehand.
Through the chair, I don't know that it's designed to catch every case. I think it's designed to provide one more tool to make it a little bit more difficult for someone to operate as a contractor, building houses regularly and selling them as a business. Without being licensed, it's not intended to catch people who are building their own house and then just happen to sell it. So we wouldn't be looking into those cases unless there was some reason to do it. And by that, I would say that would be a complaint.
Might I add that wouldn't that be an as-is sale?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I mean, I bought property on an as-is basis. I would suspect that's probably what it is.
Just one follow-up?
Yes, certainly.
So under that circumstance, would a person like Mr. Clark actually be protected? Or could the same thing happen?
Actually, I'm...
Through the chair, I believe the same thing could happen. You know, the... Like I say, that really what this provision would do is just provide one more tool where if someone was, you know, building houses on a regular basis and selling them, that you would be able to go and say, okay, is the house for sale? Yes, it is. Then do the research to find that they had, you know, built and sold three houses over the last couple of years. You know, there you'd have an enforcement issue. If it was somebody who'd, you know, built their house and was trying to sell it, obviously there's no issue there.
I'm familiar with Mr. Clark's situation. It happened in the adjacent district, as I recall, but I think there were 10 homes that were involved by the same builder. It was multiple over and over again. And I believe there have been cases in the Valley and Anchorage as well, but that one is most notable because it happened in my backyard. I know the process has not worked for him at this point in time. But Representative Tilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We were asked to get a legal opinion on limitations on sales and non-licensed owner builders, and I just received it from my aide, just brought it down, and I was wondering if I had permission to pass that out.
I think Conrad can probably...
Okay, thank you.
Looks like he magically already has them.
Look at that.
We'll take a break at ease. Back on the record, Representative Ledoux. Representative Colbert.
Yeah, I had a question for the Director of Licensing for Department of Commerce. Ms. Chambers, if...
Please join us, Sarah.
thank you. Mr. Chairman, kind of like Columbo confused here. So we've talked with Department of Labor, like they're enforcing the statute. And they have, and they're going to be approving what's the note from our mom if we can sell our house. And it's, this is a licensing statute, 08. It's not, and the reference in statute refers to the Department of Commerce. So I don't know what authority Department of Labor has in promulgating and enforcing. They do the inspections, right? Maybe you can clarify that for me, Director Chambers.
Through the chair, first, I'm Sarah Chambers, the director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, and through the chair, Representative Culver, the Department of Labor has a reimbursable services agreement. It's a contract to enforce to provide enforcement services for construction contractors, mechanical administrators, and electrical administrators. You are correct, those are our statutes, and we are employing them, as it were, as an efficiency measure. Since their inspectors are out in the field anyway, we wanted to take advantage of that opportunity and invite them to become educated and skilled in these statutes as well, which they've been doing successfully for several years.
Okay, field inspections. So who would make the determination, be the Department of Commerce, Department of Labor, whether or not the sale of a home would circumvent the requirements of this chapter as stated lines 21 through 25, subsection 11, page 2 of the bill?
Through the chair, Representative Culver, my understanding, my interpretation is that would reside within our department, Department of Commerce, but it would be a partnership with the Department of Labor, since they could be the most likely agency to be detecting and issuing a cease and desist order or a fine out in the field if this is brought to their attention. So we would have a partnership in that way. The final arbitration and new license action, the actual collection of the fine, and the due process rights to appeal that fine or that cease and desist are all elements that we would handle within our agency.
Okay.
Follow-up or new question?
New question. What will the cost, what's the fiscal impact of the department to enforcing and regulating this section? Last meeting, on the record, you said that the department would have to promulgate regulations on what conditions an owner could sell their home within this two-year period. What's that going to cost to administer and prepare the regulations and oversee that?
I think the chair, Representative Culver, we have a average cost to promulgate regulations that we've determined throughout the division to be approximately $2,500 for the cost of legal and publication to the licensees of those regulations that affect their licensure. I don't anticipate any significant or even measurable increase in the cost of enforcement because these are the types of things that we're structured to do anyway. And as has been testified by Director Mitchell, he and I believe, are on the same page with how this would be approached, that we would not be seeking out permission ahead of time, but when a complaint is brought to our attention, that we would follow through these steps in order to determine whether the person, the subject of the complaint, qualifies under the exemption or not.
So,
new question or
a lot of time, a little time, when one of these comes in?
Through the chair, Representative Culver, much of our investigative cost is tied to the complainant's willingness to work with the state, and so it's hard to anticipate. I do not see a significant increase in our enforcement to comply with this
okay.
statute.
And just to clarify,
new question or follow-up?
New question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to the Ms. Chambers. Existing statute doesn't prohibit sale of an owner constructing home within 2 years. Merely states that only one newly constructed home by an owner builder every 2 years. There's no prohibition on sale currently, right?
Through the chair, Representative Culver, that's correct.
Thank you.
Any further questions while we have Sarah? Thanks again. We have at least one person in the room that would care to testify. Earl Champion, a familiar face, at least once a year. Welcome back.
My annual visit. Representative Olson, members of the committee, my name is Earl Champion. I'm representing Alaska Association of Realtors, and I'm chair of the Legislative Issues Committee. I'll be very brief. We're in support of this bill, and my understanding is that the Attorney General has said the current statute is not clear enough to be able to have the Department of Labor or the Department of Commerce and Economic Development go after violators of home construction without the proper licensing. It clarifies that the owner builder cannot have a home for sale, and especially have it on the multiple listing service under the construction if they're not properly licensed. We as realtors are required to verify that when we take a listing. They must have a builder's license, they must also have a residential endorsement, and they must have continuing education similar to us real estate licensees. If they don't, with this change, the Department of Labor can force them to get a license or stop building. They do not want to make it more difficult in rural areas, but when homes are flipped every 2 years, we know there's another intent for the contractor to be doing this. So we support the adoption of this bill, and we would be available for any questions or other further comments.
Any questions for Mr. Champion? Seeing none, thanks again for joining us. Anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none and nobody online, with that we'll close out public testimony. The members have before them in their packet a CS that we've been referring to on and off W. I would entertain a motion to adopt the CS as a working document.
Mr. Chair, I move CSHB 81 version W.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Conrad Jackson from my staff will explain what the CS does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson and the committee. You will see on page 2 of the CS version W, line 10 and line 12, the addition of a couple of four words on the first line, an existing structure on, and then on line 12, adding the word existing. This was at the recommendation of Gray Mitchell, was discussed at the first hearing of House Bill 81, and the CS was drafted at the chairman's request.
Any questions for Mr. Jackson on the CS? With that, I will represent Culver.
Mr. Chairman, if you'd allow me, I'd kind of like to state for the record a couple of clarifications. Mr. Clark, who testified, and his wife had that unfortunate incident to buy the home that we're so familiar with, and we have the packet presented here today. Well, there's a trooper's report in there, case 12-7320 on February 8th, 2012.
Is that pertinent to the CS?
Yeah, because this was fraud, Mr. Chairman. The building inspection from Alaska Housing Forum, and on the second page, item 4, completion and installation of vapor barrier, signed off by a home inspector. So the homeowner had no knowledge, the home inspector, and the police report's about fraud committed by the home inspector. So it's much bigger than a licensing violation. It's fraudulent, a home inspection, misrepresentation of the home for sale. And so I just want to make sure that the record's clear that this has been investigated as fraud and was recommended for prosecution as such by the investigating trooper. There's one other thing that was on the record in testimony we had last meeting that I think there needs to be cleared up. Another very unfortunate, in fact, very sad. A family died of asphyxiation in a home in Wasilla. We had testimony, and I don't recall the individual, last meeting on February 11th, that alluded to the fact that maybe this was a home owner-built home, and that's why there was a problem with the mechanical system and the family was asphyxiated. I did some research on that.
Again, is it pertinent to the CS? The CS is what's before us right now.
It's pertinent, to the CS because the CS is taking action to regulate an activity that I think needs to be very clear that people didn't die in that home because of an owner-built home. They built in a home because a home was modified by the homeowner to vent their heat, their utility room into the master bedroom, cut a hole in the wall to have a fan pull the excess heat and change the ventilation of the heating apparatus, and carbon monoxide killed their family. Very sad situation. And a safety switch was bypassed. It wasn't really relevant to whether it was a builder or an owner-builder home. It was simply a modification of the heat system that caused that tragedy. So we like to be clear on the record, I think, of kind of the drivers of these situations. So I just feel it's important that the record be clear on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
I just wanted to ask if either Representative Culver or you might know why, if the trooper recommended a fraud prosecution, why it was not prosecuted for fraud.
Same answer. What's before us is a CS, not public testimony that came in. I have no idea. I'm suspecting Representative Culver probably, he may have an idea, but it's not before us. So I am lifting my objection to the CS. Is there any further objection to the CS, adopting the CS? Well, with that, we will, the CS is adopted. And Representative Tilton, please explain, or would you like to make a motion to amend, or to make a motion to adopt your amendment number one?
Yes, I move amendment number one.
Any objection?
Object.
Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number one is a legislative intent statement to make it clear that this bill is intended to be interpreted in a way as not to infringe on the freedoms of Alaska to construct and sell their own home, but rather to make sure that the people who are acting as contractors as a course of business are doing so in a lawful manner.
Representative Culver.
Mr. Chairman, I can't support the intent language. It sounds nice, but it won't have any meaning in interpreting the statute only if we went back to review the legislative history and look at legislative intent. It won't have any place in the statutory evaluation that how the provisions of subsection 12 are applied. It contradicts with the clear language that limits the sale of the home with this statement that it doesn't have any effect on property rights, which I think it does. And so we can pass it, but it won't in effect have any meaning, if you will, because it's merely an intent statement, and the holding by the Supreme Court is that it doesn't hold any law. It's merely an intent statement that goes along in the legislative history. Thank you.
Any further comments? Madam Clerk, please call the vote.
Representative Hughes?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
Yes.
Representative Culver?
No.
Representative
Tilton?
Yes. Representative Tito?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Schnall? Absent. 5 yeas, 1 nay.
How about me?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
6 yeas, 1 nay.
With that, amendment number one passes by the vote of 6-1. Before us, we have another amendment. Representative Culver, would you like to explain amendment number two and make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number two.
And I'll adopt, or I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Amendment two, we're talking about trying to enforce contracting laws so we get better built homes. And I think we can get better enforcement by requiring disclosure. What this bill does, in lieu of restricting property rights that you cannot sell your home for 2 years if you build it, would require a contractor to display their license number on any advertising for sale of a new home, and also require that an owner-builder offering a home for sale within 2 years of construction display and disclose that it was built by owner. This will keep the government out of it. We won't have an arbiter, the Department of Commerce, deciding who can opt out of the two-year sale provision if they're owner-builder. We won't have additional staff time by the department, in the Department of Law, I mean, in labor. And Alaskans won't have to ask permission to sell their lawfully built home. So, you know, I think it's a simpler, cleaner way to take care of what we're trying to avoid, is unlicensed builders building homes with full disclosure. The owner, the seller, the market will be aware. Whoever has an owner-builder sign out there will certainly be homed in on, and how many they're building. So with this disclosure and all advertising, we're accomplishing the same mission. And this amendment then would delete that provision restricting the owner-builder from selling their home in 2 years, and therefore avoid the whole discussion of the property rights issue, whether or not this is unreasonably burdensome to property owners, a government infringing on their right to interference with the use and value of their property. So,
any comments, Representative Quito?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do have a question. I guess in subsection D, you identify, or the amendment identifies a residential contractor or the agent of a residential contractor. Can you explain the agent of the residential contractor? Would that not need to be a general contractor?
I think the real estate agent.
Representative Culver?
Through the chair, Representative Quito. Agent being real estate agent.
Thank you.
Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if Mr. Nagel is still on the line, but Section B of Representative Culver's amendment is already addressed under Section 0818051, identification requirements for contractors, which I could go on, but I think Mr. Nagel could explain about
it. Mr. Nagel, are you still with us? Representative Nagel? Going twice? Is he still on? Or?
I am here, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for rejoining us. Please state your name and affiliation. Did you get the question?
I did not. That's what I muted myself, I think.
Representative Tilton?
Yes, Mr. Nagel. Representative Culver's amendment number two has a section B, which I believe is already required in law under Section 0818051, identification requirements for contractors, and I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Chair, Representative Tilton is Al Nagel.
Al, could you read yourself onto the record again, please?
Mr. Chairman, this is Al Nagel. I'm Program Manager for Mechanical Inspection for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And the existing statute in 0818-151 requires substantially the same thing that's in subsection D in the amendment. It may be a little plainer speak in the amendment, but the requirement is still there in subsections B and C of the existing statute. If you'd like, I can expound on that, but
good for me. Thanks, Dan. Al, are you going to stick around in case we need you?
I am sticking around, sir.
Thanks again.
Go
for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier, I had asked of Department of Labor, I believe, what's his name, Gray Mitchell?
Mitchell.
Yes. How the bill might impact the ordinary Alaskan wanting to build his or her own home, and they wouldn't have to do anything different than the way it is right now. However, this amendment would require add a requirement for the owner-builder, and if we are trying to promote individual liberty and not putting onerous requirements on ordinary Alaskans who want to build their home, this is actually adding that, and so I won't be supporting this amendment.
Mr. Mitchell, do you have any comments? Are you still with us?
Yes. It's Gray Mitchell, Director of Labor Standards and Safety with Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and I really don't have any comment. It does seem to create another requirement for everyone who builds their own house to put some statement of that effect in the advertising.
Thanks again. Any questions for Mr. Mitchell? Seeing none, thanks again, Gray. Any further questions?
Just comment, just rebuttal to the issue.
Brief one?
Yeah, this gets at the heart of the issue. We're talking about the reason this bill is before the committee is to enforce the unlicensed contractors that we have, and the concern from the industry is we have unlicensed builders selling homes. So I think we all recognize that most people in Alaska, when they build as an owner, they build to keep, to hold it, to live in it. It's not a business model. So by requiring, if people do not get a contractor's license, and that's their business model that they want to operate under and build a home every, however it is, they need to state that they were the contractor, the owner, builder. And then it's clear to the public, they're buying a home that was built by an owner-builder, not a contractor. And I think it also requirements that on the advertising on a sale of a residence by a contractor, that be disclosed, gives it's prominently displayed. And I think that's the clarification, Representative Tilton, between this and the existing statutory language. It's going to be the golden seal. It's going to be the advertising that you are buying a home that was built by a licensed contractor. And whether or not they get inspections or all that, that's due diligence to be performed by the buyer. So I think what we have here is something simpler. Rather than asking the government permission to sell your home within 2 years, this is simply requires disclosure. We're not involving the government in it. It's the onerous is on the public. It's disclosure. It's similar to how we handle a lot of things. Thank you.
Representative Liddell.
Just a comment here. I guess I don't understand why you'd want, if it's actually a business as opposed to a legitimate homeowner building his own home, but if it actually is a business model, why you'd have two classes of people. One group of people who have to get licensed and bonded, and another group of people who are doing this as a business who don't have to get licensed and bonded. I have a problem with this amendment, and I like the bill.
Any further comments?
I'll chime in since this is
Representative Joseph.
This is actually
we're wired up today.
Yeah. I actually I'm likely to not vote for the amendment, but I actually don't think the burden on subsection E in particular is so egregious. After all, the law already restricts you to building one home every 2 years. So we're already in current law. There's already a sort of break on pure liberty interests to do sort of whatever you want, however you want, whenever you want. And I think I take Mr. Culver's point that that this is designed to give notice and sort of cure the problem of House Bill 81 is trying to cure in a different way. The one concern I do have with it, however, is that a person could very likely be working on a home for 2 years. I know they could for a year. I mean, I hear about that all the time, that it takes a year for an individual to build a home. It takes 6 months for a contractor to build one. Certainly that could spill into a second year, and then the notice is sort of eaten up by the time of construction, because the amendment says that it would start after construction. Well, it could end at the time of sale, and so I don't really know that there'd be a whole lot of notice. Those are my thoughts.
Any further questions? With that, I'll maintain my objection, and Madam Clerk, call for the vote.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Hughes?
No.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Culver?
Yes.
Representative Kelton?
No.
Representative Pino?
No.
Chair Olson?
No.
One yay, six nays.
With a vote of six yeas and one nay, amendment number two fails. Representative Culver, you don't have an amendment number three, do you? Or
yes.
You do.
I move amendment number three, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Amendment number three basically exempts unorganized communities. This would be where it would be apply in a home rule, first class or second class borough, or unified municipality.
Any comments? I'll maintain my objection.
Well, I guess if for further fact finding, if I could,
well, certainly. Sir,
if I understand this correctly. As a general rule, in the larger communities, there's already going to be some code enforcement, and so I think that's the impetus, that there's culturally a greater understanding that if you're in the city, you've got to deal with your neighbor closer by, and there's more government. Everyone knows that that's true in the cities, and it comes with the territory. So I get that up to a point. But I'm wondering, I assume the problem that Ms. Tilton is trying to remedy exists outside the cities in rural Alaska as well. I'd invite any further discussion of that to help me.
As respects the Kenai Peninsula Borough, the problems are coming from, they're not from Kenai and Soldotna necessarily, they're from the outside the city limits. I would suspect it's probably that way in Fairbanks and Anchorage as well. Well, we've got a combined. In Anchorage, I don't know. I left there about the time that we had the merger. But Representative Culver?
Yeah, this would, I think it would help not unduly send the Department of Labor out to somewhere along the Yukon, the Kuskokwim River to inspect. I mean, most people build out way out. And we do out some of the areas. This wouldn't apply in the Kenai Borough. This amendment would be simply Glen Allen, for instance, Tok, the river systems, those areas, and I don't know that we can afford to really be so carried away on who's building what and when they sold it, and do we have the funding to enforce those kind of measures. So we put laws in the books that aren't going to be enforced. What's the point?
Any further comments? Representative Keto.
Mr. Chairman, I think I just want to add that I think in the unorganized areas is where people do need the protections of law in order to protect them from actions that might impact them that they're not aware of. So, thank you.
Anybody else? Well, I'm going to maintain my objection. Madam Clerk.
Amendment 3. Representative Keto.
No.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Hughes?
No.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Culver?
Yes.
Representative Tilton?
No.
Chair Olson?
No.
One yes, six
nays. By a vote of one yay, six nays, amendment number three fails. That brings us down to the backslash W version of the bill. Any comments on the bill?
Yes. More than you might imagine.
You've got 35 minutes.
Quite that much. I'll leave at least one for everyone. No. Mr. Chairman, I only wish that everything that I do as a legislator would provide me with the time that I've spent on this. I mean that absolutely seriously. We'd be in session all year long to get through our work. That's the problem. I have a lot of different thoughts about this bill, and I'll share with you some of them. I first of all take Representative Culver's point that I think, and I don't mean to speak for him too much, but I think his position might be too much government isn't a good thing. If people are foolish and they make bad purchasing decisions, that's on them. They need to be grown-ups and be vigilant, look after themselves. I think of the doctrine caveat emptor, buyer beware. All of those things are applicable, and I think they apply here. I think that in terms of the liberty interest, if I read this correctly and someone were to take 2 years to build, they could not alienate or transfer the property for 2 years. So they're sort of tied to this thing for as long as 4 years. That's sort of a concern to me. On the other hand, I'm not surprised by Ledge Legal's opinion, because I've read, for example, the decision cited from 1974, the Boras decision, about zoning and regulation. The fact is there are over 300 million people in this country. It's a much more complicated place than it was when it was founded. And there are just a lot of rules. I mean, we have rules about everything. But they're designed, I think, generally to keep us safer. I would say also, in defense of Mr. Culver's concerns, the idea that the department's, quote, satisfaction would be the deciding factor, that's awfully arbitrary and capricious. I have no idea what that really means. I also am not entirely sure how these key lines are going to help very much, that it's real marginal. I don't think it's going to move the needle a whole lot on enforcement. Enforcement costs money. That's probably the issue. Then we also have the issue, I think of things like dry cabins. You can't build a dry cabin in Anchorage. You sure can't outside of Anchorage. So you get into that cultural phenomenon. But ultimately, what really is persuasive to me was what Mr. Green wrote on February 18th, a letter in support of House Bill 81. He says, quote, "If you believe anybody should be able to be a builder, then we need to change and or do away with the requirements we now place on our licensed general contractors." Mm-hmm. I think that's the deciding factor for me. So I'm going to be voting that we move this out with a positive recommendation to the body. Thanks.
This is kind of scary, but I agree with everything that you said.
That's a compliment.
That is a compliment. Further comments? Representative Culver.
And wrap up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know what this fight's all about. I come from the community where this is generated from. This is not going to change the competitive landscape. Even if there's a few builders out there or whatever, business people that are not getting licensed for whatever reason or not, they're simply going to get a license, but that playing field is not going to change. There's competitive business models that are used to be competitive. And so I don't think that the results are going to be there for the building sector because it passes bill. But what will happen is Alaskans are going to lose freedom. We don't like to go to the government to ask permission if we can sell our property. We don't have to go to the Securities and Exchange Commission and ask if we can sell our stocks because we might put the economy into turmoil. We are free to buy and sell property as we see fit. And the law allows Alaskans to build their own home. every 2 years. That was put in place by the builder several years ago to put in that every 2 year restriction. So we haven't had adequate enforcement of the licensing statute, and so now we've come to this measure, which I think is an overreach, and it will cost the government a lot of money. I don't think it's the government's decision to decide what are the proper situations, because we didn't define that in this bill, of when these folks can opt out with they can get permission to sell. So that's yet to be determined, and that needs to be worked out before this thing becomes law. But, you know, there's a lot of Alaskans that feel very strongly about their rights, and, you know, and I join them in that. And I think we can have a competitive landscape in a well-licensed and a well-regulated building industry. But these communities where these problems are coming from do not want building permits. There's building permits in small cities like the city of Wasilla, but not the greater Mat-Su borough. And so we're kind of regulating the industry and through another angle. We want the state to intervene. And so these are some of the questions that need to be solved locally because, I mean, the area I represent, I bet, has 50, 60, 70% owner-builder homes. People get a piece of land, they build their own place, they add on to it. And then if they sell, typically the buyer would then get their own inspector. And what we've seen here is a reason to pass this bill wasn't a result of an unlicensed builder. It was simple fraud, somebody that cheated somebody else and falsified documents and sold a home that made them rely on those documents, recorded those documents. And so I think this is overkill, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And, you know, I didn't expect to, when the majority of members are co-sponsors on the bill, that I was going to have a lot of success. But I think I made the point. And so I think we ought to be very careful with limiting Alaskans' liberty. And that's the statement that I hope that we made here today, that let's tread lightly on Alaskans' freedoms. Thank you.
Representative Ladue.
I just feel that we should have a level playing field. And I get the arguments about individual liberty, and they're as important to me as they are to anybody else in this body. But I guess I think that we either pass this bill or we simply eliminate licensing requirements for everyone in the industry, which sounds like a kind of wingnut idea, but for most of this century, the idea of caveat emptor, let the buyer beware, actually did apply to construction contracts. But we've made policy decisions a while back that we require builders, contractors to be licensed and bonded. So let's make it for everybody.
You're up. Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would not be supporting this if it were limiting liberty of individual Alaskans. To make it clear, get it corrected, this does not require individual Alaskans who are owner-builders to seek permission from the government. They do not have to take that step. We heard that clearly. And so this is not putting another burden on owner Alaskans. And as has been previously stated, this has been a policy decision. We did receive, and those listening that didn't get to read the legislative memo, this doesn't have any constitutional implications associated with an unwarranted restraint of trade for the owner-builder. And the stories that we heard, even though they were referred to as far as an inspector being at fault and needing to prosecute an inspector, the inspector didn't catch things that were wrong with the home. So there was a problem with how the home was built. So you have to remember the underlying thing, and there is the policy decisions have been made in order to have safe homes. I would love if the market could take care of it and we'd get the best product for the best price, but a house, you can't see everything when you walk in the door of a house. There are a lot of internal things. There are things you know, in the walls and underneath and around, and that it, we are not all experts to be able to check that out. And yes, indeed, we can hire inspectors. But if there are times when these things are missed, that needs to be addressed as well. But we need to know that the homes, a buyer needs to know that the home has been built by someone who knows what they're doing and is doing a good job and following the rules. When we have quite large, fancy homes, it's not just a simple dry cabin like in some situations where we wouldn't need that. So I just want to put on the record that to make clear we are not requiring individual Alaskans to go seek permission from the government. This change in statute would not do that, and Alaskans would continue to have their liberty to build their homes and sell them.
Representative Tilton, it's your bill. In wrap-up, you got a few words, or just say vote for it? Or
in wrap-up, I appreciate, through the chair, thank you for this. Thank you. I appreciate the questions that Representative Josephson has brought, and I also appreciate Representative Hughes's comments. It is in no way the desire to stop people from building their own homes or selling their own homes. This is a bill that is to close a loophole in an already existing bill, and that it's simply that. It's not to take personal liberties away from anyone. So thank you.
Any further comments? Seeing none, with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I
move House Bill 81 out of committee, version /W, as amended with attached fiscal note.
Ah, the fiscal note. How much? Same?
Same.
Mr. Chair, I move HB 81-29-LS-0346-W as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Jack.
Madam Clerk, please call the vote.
Representative Tilton.
Yes.
Representative Keto.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Hughes.
Yes.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Representative Colbert.
No.
Chair Olson.
Yes. And with that, House Bill 81 moves out of committee, and we will take a brief adjournment to sign the report. We're now back on the record. Next up is House Bill 86. We heard this bill on Wednesday, but we did not take any action because the packets got out late. We have Jerry Burnett from the Department of Revenue with us to give us a real brief overview.
Yeah, for the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue, and sitting here for the last hour and a half, I really understand how easy my job is. So I appreciate that. House Bill 86 is a bill that takes a number out of the statute and replaces it with a phrase that says it to meet the objectives of the fund. It takes the 7% investment objective. None of our other funds besides the PCE fund have a numerical objective in statute. And I think you heard very well from Pam Leary, the Treasury Director, and Gary Bader, our Chief Investment Officer, what the risks of having too much risk in your fund when you're trying to reach a specific numerical objective on a year-to-year basis. With that, I think that explains what the bill does and why we think it's important to make a change, this small change to the law.
Just one question.
Sure. Representative Jones.
Thank you. Through the chair.
Am I going to agree with this one?
I don't know. It's just a question. It's not a state
question.
Is Mr. Burnett?
Burnett, yes.
Burnett. Mr. Burnett, did anything unfortunate happen to the account, or are we just catching this problem before something could?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I don't think anything. I've only been at the Department of Revenue for 10 years. And since almost since the inception of the fund actually started a couple of years before I did, we had some fairly large losses in 2008 in the fund, but relatively speaking, it's there's no bad decisions have been made in regard to this fund that I'm aware of during that time. But I would say that the five commissioners that I've worked for have all supported taking the number out of the statute.
Representative Kito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I thought it seems like at this point the investment goals may have changed. We are generating enough income in the fund to pay for the current power cost equalization program, and it does seem like we'd want to manage it to not lose that ability. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Kito, that it's probably less important to be an aggressive investor with this fund at this point than it might have been a few years ago. The balance in the fund is over $950 million, and a 7% payout is more than what's required to manage the PCE expenditures. So I think it's possibly better to be ratcheting down risk for those. You know, it's well within the objectives of the fund if you ratchet down risk a little bit.
Thank you.
And for the people that might be listening that aren't in the room, the committee received documentation today that since 2000 the fund has averaged 6.05.
That's a geometric return, annualized return. So that's not an arithmetic average of the returns year to year. It's a geometric average over the year. So it's the actual return, including those losses that occurred.
Any further questions for Mr. Burnett? Representative Hughes.
Thank you. You mentioned under the five commissioners under which you've served, they all thought that this was a need, and it's just now being brought forward, and it's because, I'm assuming, because of the markets and the kind of return, and then you had explained something about the type of investments. Could you explain that and just to clear, I think you kind of touched on it when you presented the other day, but just remind me.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hughes. I think Gary Bader, when he was talking about it, talked about the amount, the standard deviation between different types of investments, and how having a riskier investment may look like you're going to have a higher return, and you will arithmetically over time, but your geometric return can be reduced because of the losses, getting a loss back. So capital market assumptions change every year, and so we look at different levels of risk. And so this year we might be looking at a 6% return that we're, as a goal, and next year it might be a 9% return depending on what the market is. Mm-hmm. So that those different types of investments, like stocks relative to bonds, there's fixed income investments right now have very little yield, and the stock market's been going up for the last 6 years in a row, and I think he showed you a chart that showed that it's never gone up for 7 years in a row. So that doesn't mean it won't. It's just has never happened since 1802 or something like that. That's all we've been tracking it for. Anyway, it was brought before the legislature in the past. It was actually introduced in the last legislature. It's a very similar bill with the same objective. So yes, it has been brought forth. It hasn't moved through the process.
It's actually a new question. Just so I understand, obviously the 7% was established in statute because they thought that was what might be necessary in order to be able to pay the PCE expenditures. And out of curiosity, and I know that changes, you said the fund is quite substantial now. And so what is that amount? Maybe you already mentioned it, that the return that would be. Now, if you have flexibility, you're still going to be looking at some kind of a target in order to meet those expenditures. What would that be right now?
The statute for the payout is 7% of the previous 3 years' balance, or average of the previous 3 years' balance. So we report that to the Alaska Energy Authority every year, and they then use that number as the maximum that they would request. And this year, I think we had it in the packet someplace, or maybe it was in testimony, but it's in the $50 million range, I believe, that's in the budget from PCE fund. So that would be between a 5% and 6% return if it's a $50 million. It's
still up there. Okay, thanks.
Any further questions? Thanks, Jerry. I think I closed out public testimony, didn't I? Oh, is there anybody online that would care to testify? Nope. Anybody in the room? Recognize all the faces? Nobody in the room. With that, we'll close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to move House Bill 86 out of committee.
Mr. Chair, I move HB 86-29-GH1018/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the bill will move out of committee. House Bill 86, as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Not amended. With that, we will adjourn at 10 minutes to 5.